yet. Okay. I'm open, though.
Great. Okay, welcome to Greek Club here at High Priestly Tower in St. Louis at Concordia Seminary. We are reading through the letter to the Hebrews. And the elect are here, gathered from the four winds, from the corners of the earth until its corners. And we're in Hebrews 7, where we actually get into what the writer to the Hebrews has hinted at several times, that is, the nature and superiority of the high priestly office of Christ. You probably recall, you know, these kind of verses just live in our heads, where Christ is a high priest chosen from among men. He knows our weakness. He can sympathize and so forth. So we've had these sort of brief comments from the writer to the Hebrews about Christ's high priestly office. But this, the really unique, this is one of the most unique, if not the most unique contribution of Hebrews, is what we're about to get into now about the priesthood according to the order of Melchizedek. Now, of course, the quotation here is from Psalm 110, and I think it's verse 4. You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. So Psalm 110 is a very important messianic psalm. It functions a lot in the New Testament. And the other interesting thing, we won't go into this just because it doesn't have anything to do with grammar or syntax, but there is actually a fair amount of speculation about Melchizedek in the Second Temple period. You get these documents that are wondering about Enoch, for instance, this mysterious figure in Genesis who was not because God took him, right? And so there is actually a writing. It's a composite of five documents, scholars think, that have been later put together called First Enoch. And you can read First Enoch if you want to in English translation, and I highly recommend it if you either want to gain some insight into some aspects of the Second Temple period or if you're having a hard time falling asleep. Because it's interesting in a kind of a, would that be right brain or left brain kind of way? I don't know. One of the sides of the brain would find it interesting, maybe. So anyway, there are documents that purport to be about or even from Melchizedek in Judaism of the time period. So the writer to the Hebrews is not the only one, if I could say it that, who's thinking about this mysterious figure from Genesis. And he's about to recall the narrative there of Genesis 14, where Abraham meets this mysterious figure. We're going to start at chapter 7, verse 1. And believe it or not, I'm just going to tell you that essentially from Hutaskar Ha Melchizedek all the way 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines is the subject of the sentence. Yes. And the verb, believe it or not, is mene. He remains. So I promise that this doesn't happen very often. That's what I promise. And all of these other adjectives, and we'll see participles functioning as substantized adjectives in this long string. It's all in, virtually all of it is in apposition to this Melchizedek. So nominative, and then you get a bunch of nominative stuff, and it's all just. So if you're going to diagram the sentence, you know, when you're, this doesn't work well on the air, but you know, the subject's over here, and then you put the line, and then you put the verb, and then the direct object. See, the subject is all Melchizedek and things about him. But the basic sentence that runs from verse 1 through verse 3 is, this Melchizedek remains as a priest unto the everlasting, that is to say, forever. That's the sentence. So let's just dive into it. It's a lot of it is not too hard. You just kind of, it's like taking a deep breath, right? And some of the vocab we might have to look up. So we'll do verse 1. Hutoskar ha Melchizedek basileus salem hierius tu theu tu hipsistu ha sin antesas Abraham hip as strephante apates capes ton basileon kai eologesas auton ... Okay, so 4, so it's all explaining what it means for Jesus to have become a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek in chapter 6, verse 20. For this Melchizedek, a comma, we have a comma there provided by the editors, king of Salem, in apposition, right, nominative, Basileus, in apposition to Melchizedek. Then, again, in nominative apposition, priest of God, the highest one, the most high God, right? Now let's further describe Melchizedek, and we have one article, ha, which actually governs two participles. So the first one is right next to it, right? Synantesos, which is from synantao, means to greet. And you can see it's a weak aorist participle with the sigma and the alpha sigma, like lusas in your paradigm for active participles. And who can spot the second participle that ha also governs? It's a little ways away. Anybody spot it? It's got to be masculine singular nominative. That's it. Eulogesos, from eulogeo, which means I bless, right? So Melchizedek is priest of the Most High God, the one who greeted Abraham and blessed him. That would be the basic structure of that kind of double participial construction. Okay, and in between the two participles, we have the one who greeted Abraham, and now we have hypostrephante. This is a little tricky, I suppose. Abraham would actually have to parse. The name doesn't decline. It doesn't change its form moving from case to case. But after synantao, it would have to be dative. That verb takes a dative object. And then hypostrephantes from hypostrepho, which means to return. And it's masculine singular dative. See the ante ending. And the referent is Abraham. You could take it either as attributive adjectival. There's no article anywhere on Abraham or the participle. So you could translate it, who greeted Abraham who was returning. Or you could take it as predicate position and maybe a temporal translation. The one who greeted Abraham while he, that is Abraham, was returning. But under any case, it's Abraham who's doing the returning because the participle agrees in gender, number, and case with the referent, right? So, who greeted Abraham as he was returning from the slaughter of the kings? And you remember the story when, I think Lot was snatched up in that battle, wasn't it? And that's why Abraham took his mighty men of valor, you know, and hot-footed it after the kings and killed a bunch of them and took Lot and his possessions back, right? So, he greeted Abraham and he blessed him. That is to say, Melchizedek did all of these things. And the writer to the Hebrews is especially going to make a point of the fact that Melchizedek blessed the patriarch Abraham. Because, it's easy enough, usually the one who does the blessing is superior to the one who receives the blessing. Right? And we're all kind of nodding, oh yeah, that makes sense. Well, that's exactly how the author is going to argue. Right? And now we're still, but this is all nominative. We're all still describing Melchizedek by putting adjectives and nouns, substantized participles, those kinds of things, in apposition to Melchizedek. Okay? So we're still in the midst of our deep breath. Any questions about verse 1? Again, it's kind of a mystery to me how a person could actually hear this and understand it. But it just kind of shows you the wonder of culture and language and the human brain, I suppose. So, okay, let's describe the situation further. Verse 2. Ho kai dekaten apapanton emerisen Abraham, proton men, her menuamenos basileus dikaiosines, epeta de kai basileus salem, ha esten basileus irenes or irenes. So we start with a relative pronoun, right? So when in doubt, it's dative. Just go with to, right? To whom, and in context, the antecedent has to be Melchizedek. So we're still talking about Melchizedek. To whom also a tenth or a tithe from all Abraham merizoed. He apportioned. And amerisen, you can see, is a pretty easy form. It's got the temporal augment. It's just an aorist indicative active third singular with a movable nu. To whom also a tenth from all Abraham apportioned. Now, we're going to continue to describe Melchizedek, this time with a mendec construction. All right? And you can see the men, and the de of this mende, let's see, there's two des as possibilities. Yeah, I think it's the first one. That's probably the easier way to go. So we'll pick up with proton. So it, as you all know, it means first, right? And it's accusative singular, so it's an adverb. Firstly, in the first place. On the one hand, in the first place, now we've shifted back to nominative singular, right? So we're talking about Melchizedek. Being translated or being interpreted King of Righteousness. So now we're talking about his name, Melech and Tzedek, right? Those are the two Hebrew words that constitute the name Melchizedek. So being interpreted King of Righteousness, epeta means then, but then also King of Salem, which is King of Peace, obviously a play on the term Shalom, right? And so we're deriving significance from the name of Melchizedek and from the place where he rules, that is Salem, right? So we're still holding our breath. We're still working in the nominative is still running the show, right? So after the relative clause, we have the nominative hermeneuomenos. Then we have Basileus Salem. Then we have Basileus Irenes. So we haven't actually gotten to the verb yet, as I indicated. But this is all important information about how great Melchizedek is. Okay? Questions about verse 2? Anything at all? Like, why couldn't the writer have had a shorter sentence? Or something reasonable like that, right? Okay, more nominatives, all right? Now we have a string of adjectives. Apator, which you might be able to guess means, anybody? Fatherless, right? Or without a father. You put the alpha privative on the front and it negates it, right? Fatherless. Oh, the next one's easiness. Easy, right? Motherless. Now, what exactly is he saying here? Great mystery, of course, in Christian exegesis and theology. Some people want to take these words very seriously and literally. And so, as you probably know, people have sometimes argued that Melchizedek is actually who? He's the pre-incarnate Christ. Yeah. And you know? Yeah, nice eyebrows, Jay. Yeah. That might be right. You know, along with other sort of human appearances of God that you see sprinkled in mysterious ways around the Old Testament, like the Moloch Yahweh, who appears to Gideon. And remember, in some of those stories, you have this alternation where, without warning, the text says, and the angel said, blah, 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 and then without warning, and Yahweh said, blah, blah, blah. See? So who is this, right? So you have these mysterious texts, and an argument can be made. Others see Melchizedek as a more of a purely human figure, and yet as a type for which Christ and his priesthood is the greater anti-type. So I think you can be sort of an Orthodox Lutheran and Christian and argue either way, but it's very interesting, and if you've never delved into it, you can no doubt do that in your free time, right? Or when you take Hebrews as an elective, right? So without father, without mother, without genealogy, does this mean we just don't know his genealogy? Or does it mean he doesn't have one? Right? So, good question. Now it gets a little more complex. Neither beginning of days nor of life end having. So that participle there is nominative singular, masculine, And its referent is Melchizedek, about 87 words away, right? So you could take it as a substantive or as just directly adjectival. The one who has neither beginning of days nor of life end. So Zoes there precedes telos, but it modifies it as a genitive modifier. And now one more nominative, and then we're done. Afhamoyamenos is from afhamoyao, and it would parse as present participle passive, and could be translated being made like, or just becoming like. And it takes a dative, so becoming like the Son of God. Now we're done describing Melchizedek, and we finally get to the verb. This Melchizedek remains a priest, eis ta dienenkes. Now I think we might have seen this adjective before, dienenkes. It means continuous or uninterrupted. I had to look it up, so I wrote it down. Right, it's right here on the piece of paper. So into the uninterruptedness, which means forever, right? Because, see, that's, the writer to the Hebrews is taking the wording of Psalm 110, verse 4, very seriously. Thou art a priest, Messiah, thou art a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek, right? And so he's taking the wording very seriously, if I could say it that way. So this priest remains forever. And now in the next paragraph, he's actually going to mount his argument, the beginning of his argument, as to why Melchizedek's priesthood is superior to Levi's. Because what's lurking in the background is the danger, you know, to recapture the context in some sense, the audience of this letter, original audience, is tempted in some way to pull back from the full confession of Christ and to rely again on Levitical sacrifices and Old Testament revelation. Not that there's anything bad with that, but that's the shadow, right? And now the substance, the fullness has come, and he doesn't want them to drift away back into that situation. We actually don't know very much about their context. The only things that we can surmise about what's going on are the things that you sort of read off the surface of how the argument actually runs. So other than that, we're a little bit in the dark as to who this letter is originally addressed to. So, okay, questions about really anything in verses 1, 2, and 3, like how do you parse that form, or what's going on there grammatically, or anything at all? All right, silence means either complete agreement or complete bafflement. We'll take the former, right? Verse 4. Theoreta de pe likos hutos, ho kai de katein Abraham edoken, ek ton akro thinian ha patriarches. So he begins with a form from theoreo, which is epsilon contract, that's why the circumflex. It could be one of two moods. Anybody? Could be either what or what? Imperative or? Could be indicative as well. These forms would happen to be the same, right? So, see, and what are you supposed to see? Pelikos is an adjective, it means how great. See, how great is this guy? Hutas, and the antecedent is everything that's come before, that is Melchizedek. Now, another dative relative pronoun, right? So, when in doubt, to, right? To whom, and we'll go ahead and read kai, even though it's bracketed, which means the reading is uncertain for the editors. To whom also a tenth Abraham gave. There's our friend from Didomi, Edoka, the third principal part. So this is an aorist indicative, active, third singular, movable new. To whom Abraham gave a tenth out of the word that you have to look up in the dictionary. It means spoils or booty, right? And booty is okay as long as you have the right inflection when you say it, right? Yeah. Bouti. It's a kind of neutral pronunciation, right? At this point, all of us are tempted to say "arr," right? So, when is National Talk Like a Pirate Day? Is it? I think it's in the. When is it? It's in December, I think. It's in the fall, I think, or early winter, right? Oh, we're not done talking about Abraham. Let's throw something on the end here. Nominative alert, ha patriarches. Now, everybody knows what patriarches means. It means patriarch, right? And maybe there's an emphasis here. You typically hear and read that the first position in a clause in Greek is emphatic, and sometimes you hear that the last position is also emphatic. And so maybe that's why he's really wanting to jack up the importance of Abraham here in order to make his point, right? So wherever the word happens to be, this is not just Abraham, this is not just Bob Abraham, this is Abraham the patriarch. Yeah, exactly. In case you're not aware of this, let's emphasize this. So, and of course, the older I get, the more I think it's a great idea for people to esteem their elders. And I think, let's see, I'm pretty clearly the oldest guy in this room, so I think that's a great idea. So this is how great he is. To whom Abraham the patriarch gave a tenth of the spoils. And now let's develop this thought in verse 5. All right, are we ready to kind of continue? Kai hoi men ek ton huion lewe tain hiaratean lambanantes en tolein ekuzin apo dekatun tan laan katatanaman tutestin tus adelfus auton Kaiper ex elelithatas ectes asphias Abraham. You're thinking, I finally know a word, Abraham. Yeah, that's why I got my notes here with me with all the vocab on it, right? So let's develop this thought. And now we've got hoi, masculine plural nominative, and I'll give you a hint, it's governing a participle. Where is it? Right, very good. Lambanantes. So those who receive. That's the basic structure of that part of the sentence. And all the stuff in the middle is related to that. Okay? So on the one hand, we have men. Those out of the sons of Levi who receive tain hierateon, the priesthood. So tain hierateon there is the direct object of the participle lambanantes. So in smoother English, and on the one hand, those who receive the priesthood from the sons of Levi, those guys, and now we get the verb of the clause, ekuzen, they have a command. Right? And tolein is the direct object of ekuzen. And what's the command? Apodekatun. It's a funny looking form that it's actually a present infinitive. It's from apodekatao. It means to tithe someone or to extract or receive a tithe. Okay? And so that's the command of those of the sons of Levi who received the priesthood. That is, they have a command to tithe the people, that is to say, to receive a tithe from the people according to the law. This is, accusative, the brothers of them. That is, the people from whom they're receiving the tithe are their brothers. See? Kaiper means although the brothers have come out of the loins or the private parts. It's a third declension noun. The nominative is osphus, upsilon sigma, the loins of Abraham. So you got to imagine the argument. So the Levites have the authority, if you could say it that way, to extract or receive a tithe from fellow Abrahamites, right? Even though they're all from the same patriarch. So that's how powerful the Levitical priesthood is. Okay, that's his point. The next move he's going to make is Melchizedek received the tithe from Abraham himself. Yeah, see, that's the logic of it. That's the argument, right? Now, this is a very difficult form. I think it is toward the end of verse 5. Ex alelithotas. This is actually from, you get a $5,000 scholarship if you know what this is from. Two good guesses, both of which are completely wrong, I'm happy to say. It's actually from ex erchomai. And you got, I knew that, right? Yeah, the fourth principal part of erchomai is elelitha. So this is a perfect active participle. Ex elelithotas. And it goes, the participle goes, it begins with elelithos, and then it's, because it's active participle, it follows a third declension ending. It goes thos, thotas, thoti, thota, and this is, then it would be thotes, thoton, those, and thotas. And yes, I do it for a living, so don't feel bad. Just pity me. Say again? Ben Smith would get it. Hello, Ben. Ben's actually probably listening to Greek Club, yeah, because he's the Greek animal, right? So, yeah, this is a perfect participle active from to go out, right, to go out from. And its referent is brothers, because it's masculine plural accusative, even though they go out from the loins of Abraham. Okay, now let's see, it's almost time to stop, but let's get one more verse, and in a sense the other shoe begins to fall in verse 6 in the argument. Hade me genealogumenos ex auton de decatoken Abraham kai tan echenta tam epangelias eulogeken. See? But, on the other hand, this is the de matching the men at the beginning of verse 5. The not tracing genealogy guy from them. Does that make sense, sort of, right? Sometimes the Tonto translation is clearer, you know how you got there, rather than the smoother English translation. So, yeah, genealoga, the middle pat, the, I guess it's the passive voice of genealogeo, means to have your genealogy traced. However you render that. The one who is not genealogically traced out of them, and now we have a classic perfect form. Again, it's from dekatao. You see the duplication, the de, and then the kappa on the end of the stem, and the omega is the lengthened stem vowel from a-o verb. And so has tithed, In the sense of getting a tithe from, not giving a tithe, but dekato means to receive or extract a tithe. He tithified Abraham, and even more remarkable maybe, the having the promises guy, and ton ekanta is accusative, he blessed, he has blessed, eolage ken. Now, if your senses are not reeling morphologically at this point, you might be asking a question. Wait a minute. Eologeo. How come there's no augment or no duplication? This is actually a perfect form. And the answer is, believe it or not, with the initial diphthong, epsilon, upsilon, a lot of times these forms, they simply don't show an augment or a duplication. In a sense, you're kind of dependent on the end of the stem to be able to parse the darn thing, if I could say it that way. So it actually would parse. The kappa would be the giveaway, and it actually parses like the verb in front of it as a perfect indicative active, third singular. Do not expect yourself to know this stuff until you leave reality, go to graduate school, and do what I do for a living, right? Yeah. I mean, you guys get extra credit just for keep coming back for more Hebrews, right? So verse 6, and the one who is not genealogically traced from them has extracted a tithe from Abraham, and he has blessed the one who has the promises. And when you try to recall, and of course you could do a lot of reading on this, how prominent a figure Abraham is. I mean, he is the patriarch. And somehow, mysteriously, this Melchizedek is superior. And Christ, according to Psalm 110, is a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. It's extremely logical. Anybody who, you know, sometimes you hear postmoderns especially accusing people like me of, oh, you're just being a modernist because you're arguing logically. The answer, response to that is, get over it, pal. Aristotle was a long time ago, and everybody knows how to think logically, right? If you don't want to think logically, that's essentially your problemo. Which is not what you'd say on an evangelism visit, but, you know, you'd have my permission to think it as long as you didn't like sin in your heart or something like that. So, right, so there's nothing inherently helpful about being illogical, we'll just say it that way. And you're also not supposed to be disorganized. Okay, we will stop here at verse 7. So thank you. Thank you very much for enduring. You guys are remaining forever.